You know, when you're looking at change or when you're looking at doing a project, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So even though it can look big, break it down into the tasks so that you can accomplish it, stage it out. Projects can have phases. And then I've also frequently caught saying, don't let best stand in the way of better. We all know that there's a best practice, but our farm maybe be designed at a time where that wasn't in place. But what can we do better if we can't truly achieve, you know, what may be considered the gold standard?
We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. AB Vista, new nutritional perspectives and novel enzyme applications to drive pig production. You can combat mycotoxins in your feed with Fumezyme from DSM Firmenich. Fumezyme is the only FDA-approved enzyme to degrade fumonisins. Adiseo provides programs and services to help producers achieve their targets in a high-quality, safe, and sustainable way. Eastman works with you to accelerate your nutritional program innovation. Start your journey with us at eastman.com. Healthier pigs are good for producers, people, profits, and planet.
Hello, and welcome to today's Swine It podcast show. I'm Dr. Tara Donovan, your host, and I'd like to introduce to you today my guest, Dr. Danaya Clausen. Danaya is the Director of Health for the Carthage System. Welcome to our show, Danaya. How are you?
I'm good, Tara. Thanks for inviting me today.
Absolutely. Well, Danaya and I have known each other for many, many years, and I can attest to what a great veterinarian she is and how she interacts with her clients. So what we're going to talk about today is kind of how she works with her clients to prepare them to have a good health program with all things biosecurity, how to fight PRRS and influenza. So just a conversation about health management out there in the real world. So before we get there, though, Danaya, would you just take a little bit of time and introduce yourself to our audience? Tell us how you got where you are with Carthage.
Yeah, well, as you said, I'm Dr. Danaya Clausen. I've been with Carthage Vet Service for 17 years, graduated from the University of Illinois, and I've been the Director of Health for the Carthage System for most of my time here and worked very closely with those sow farms. We do have some finishing as well, and so oversee oversee all of the health plans, you know, pertaining to the health of those sow herds and those finishers, as well as assist some outside clients from time to time.
Yeah, great. So as you can tell, Danaya is a busy person. So one thing on, you know, on everybody's minds, right, is that virus PRRS that we talk all, you know, all the time about and is definitely one of our challenges. So tell us, you know, how do you get your herds ready for PRRS virus? And we do see a seasonal circulation of PRRS virus. So kind of going into fall, what do you do with your clients on PRRS control?
Well, that's right, Tara. As you've mentioned, we do see a seasonal uptake in PRRS. Usually it starts more north of us where we're located geographically. We see, you know, the northern herd start to see PRRS in that last week of October, kind of the week of Halloween, and then see an uptick. And then it seems to move south, and we'll see more activity where we're at geographically after the first of the year. But we do see when the cold weather comes around that this virus likes to survive in cold weather, and we see an uptick of PRRS activity. So there are a few things that we do to prepare. And this year, the Carthage System has taken a very active role. Not that we haven't had biosecurity before, but we've actually went back, broke down all of our protocols, and are looking at a biosecurity initiative, just ways that we can update our terminology, update our protocols, and get those in front of our team members to make sure that we're talking about it and that we're following it and that, you know, we feel like we're retraining the same material, because there's a few things with biosecurity that have changed over the years, but a lot of it's the same. But a lot of times you look around the barn and it's actually new faces. And so making sure that those new faces that haven't heard this information understand. And as part of being a veterinarian, you're constantly learning things yourself and you're teaching other people and hoping that they learn from you. And you find that some people just need to know what to do, and other people need to know why they're doing it, and understanding those dynamics within a group of individuals and getting that information to them the best way that you can. So we've been really focused on about seven different areas that all deal with entrances and exits at a farm, those line of separations or a clean, dirty line, and making sure that we've got the best, most robust plan around that and adapting some of the new research that has come out in the last few years that we're seizing that information. I remember in 2020 at WSB, we were down in Atlanta, Georgia, you know, before everything kind of closed up for COVID. And we were talking about the use of fogging chambers versus directly spraying. And we learned a lot from intern projects. And you can, regardless of your education level, you can always learn from somebody else, layperson, interns, other veterinarians, that really that was probably not the best way, that we didn't get a swirling of the disinfectant like we thought. It just landed on those surfaces. So adapting 7-night downtime rooms where you can put things in and things like that have really become, you know, part of that clean, dirty line of separation focus for this coming season. Other things that we do, a lot of the Carthage System farms that are filtered are seasonal filtered still. And so it's getting those farms ready, putting in filter banks, putting in their pre-filters for the farms that are filtered all year round, changing their pre-filters so that they're clean, especially after harvest. We had a very dusty harvest here in the Midwest and in Illinois, and that clogs up our pre-filters, right? So being able to ensure that those are clean and ready to go for that season. So it's always, you know, something we need to talk about, but we've really prepped in the months leading up to our PRRS season, that seasonal PRRS that you see this year.
Yeah, and I think it's important, you know, we always have biosecurity, you know, on our mind, right? It's an everyday thing, but sometimes you feel like, you know, just the simplest process, you know, isn't either getting done or that message isn't getting passed down and, you know, on farm training. And so that's an important piece, I think, for all of us, but it's also a hard feat, right? Because like you mentioned, people, you know, always new people coming to work on the farm or in a lot of farms anyway. And so they may not have all of the background, to why are we doing these processes? And usually add them all together, they're not very simple. There's a lot of steps to biosecurity, especially when it comes to sow herds. So yeah, I can appreciate the time and effort you're taking. And let's touch a little bit about, you mentioned, you know, going to an AASV meeting and learning about some new technology and realizing that maybe some of what we thought might work well didn't work well, right? So that's some idea that didn't necessarily pan out. So tell our audience a little bit how that works. And, you know, you mentioned students and student projects. I think that's a pretty key to our information and learning in terms of on the veterinary side that we have students really help us with that.
Well, like many other veterinary practices or production systems, we offer internships through the summer at Carthage Vet Service and Professional Swine Management, and so do other companies. And from there, you do research projects that you would like to know about, but may not have the time or ability to commit to it. But these interns are getting experience within the industry, experience talking to veterinarians and farm staff, and hopefully they become future swine vets. And some of it's a jumping off. A lot of them become employed at the places where they've internshiped. But being able to have them for several weeks through the summer, we can put together these small, sometimes labor intensive, sometimes not, but short studies and really get a lot of valuable information off of it. And then, so we mentioned WASV is an opportunity for them to present these presentations, so they get more contact with veterinarians and more contact within the industry. So it's been a really nice program for us and to learn from other production systems or veterinary clinics that have been able to employ these students through the summer and do these projects for us.
Yeah, and I can tell you at AASV, you know, that's probably the most attended session is the student session and the presentations, because a lot of times that's kind of the cutting edge on farm things that we're learning, right? And so the students have a competition to win some scholarship money for that, so they take it very seriously. And really, got a shout out quick to sponsors, pharmaceutical sponsors, and industry sponsors for helping those students to get there. So that's a great way for us as veterinarians to learn and really get exposure with some, you know, new minds out there. So great.
Yeah, and I think you hit the nail on the head. It's on farm research, right? They want to be on farm so that they can learn, you know, those skills, and it's adaptable. So when you do hear those presentations, you know, it's not something that was done in a research barn necessarily. It was done, you know, in everyday. So it can be very practical too.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So anything new out there that you're working on? You know, you mentioned the, you know, fog rooms that we all put in, and then we changed them to a bit of a, you know, sit and dwell kind of a 7-day downtime type of chamber. Anything new out there this year that you guys are doing? And I know retraining, right? That's something you just mentioned, but any other technologies that you guys are looking at?
No new technologies that we're looking at this time. Just reinforcing, you know, the tried and true methods that we know work, and making sure that we're auditing those processes. And then, as I said, switching over from the fog chambers to a 7-night downtime with direct chemical disinfection. So things are being sprayed down directly with disinfectants that are effective against the pathogens that we're concerned about.
Right. Okay.
An animal nutrition technology company offering innovative products and new applications for the swine industry. The combination of AB Vista enzymes, technical services, and nutrition expertise provides the industry with new opportunities to further improve production efficiencies. Fiber is receiving renewed interest due to its influence on the microbiome, and AB Vista has brought together research experts to discuss the industry's knowledge of fiber functionality and to introduce a stimbiotic targeted to improve fiber digestion. To request access, contact NAM at abvista.com. That's NAM at abvista.com. Have you considered adding cheese to your feed? Let us help. Keys Manufacturing is a family-owned and operated business, conveniently located in central Illinois. We have been producing Pro 88 cheese powder since 1997. Pro 88 is a high-quality source of protein and milk fat. Our cheese powder is research-proven to contribute to a smooth transition in early weaning pigs, being highly palatable, increasing feed intake, as well as delivering easily digestible nutrients. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com for more information and links to our research. We look forward to helping you maximize your feed.
You know, we know how to eradicate PRRS from a herd, right? With some very specific protocols and steps, but it keeps coming back, it seems. You know, why do you think that is?
Well, there's a number of different ways that pathogens enter a herd. One of those is aerosol. So that's always at the, you know, a concern and at the top of the list. And then we have other fomites. So looking at, you know, for a farm that's not filtered, do we have all of those lines of separations, clean, dirty lines addressed? And are we moving through those procedures properly to decrease the risk of bringing something from the outside world inside?
Yeah. So it feels like it's coming from every direction in terms of a sow herd.
Yeah. Sometimes it does.
So you mentioned earlier in our conversation about sort of the movement of PRRS across the country seasonally. So how do you know what are the, let's share with the audience, because some may not know some of the tools that we use to know it's kind of coming our way regionally.
Well, a lot of the key players in the industry have partnered with MSHMP, a swine health monitoring program out of Minnesota. And so they turn in their health status for PRRS, PED, Delta Corona, and any type of emerging diseases as well to that database. And so we're able to see that that progression and see that they're seeing more activity or less activity throughout the industry. And then we talk. We have meetings, you know, Tara and I, you and I have talked over the years. The other thing that I was part of in, I believe it was 2012, where we spent a lot of time partnering with our surrounding producers, the closest producers to us geographically. And we made maps of where all the farms were, sow farms, finishers. And then we used a pretty standard color coding system of green farms were PRRS negative, red farms were PRRS positive. And we started a lot of communication. And while those projects turned that first year, we turned a lot of farms green and we had PRRS on the run. We saw by the end of 2012, a kind of a resurgence of PRRS activity and said, well, we may not be able to keep these graphs and topography maps green, but we can communicate. We can know where the PERS is. We can work with production systems in our area or independent producers and make sure that where we can, we're not crossing over with, you know, outgoing livestock, whether that's wean pigs or cull sows or market trailers and things like that. So like most things in life, it comes down to communication and willing to be open and honest. And I truly believe, you know, even though we might be competitors, that the better health you have in an area, in a region, the decreased risk you have of that aerosol transmission or those fomites spreading it. So those communications and being able to be, you know, cognizant of what we're doing, where we're moving things is always a good thing for our industry.
Yeah, I think communication definitely is important when it comes to, you know, viruses like PERS that really are multifactorial, and they're a way to get into a farm from transport, as you mentioned, to aerosol to, I kind of call it community spread or contact with others just in a small geographic region with a lot of high dense swine. So absolutely. So let's move on to what about influenza? That's another, you know, this is a bit of a just general health discussion. What are you doing with your herds for influenza?
Yeah, influenza can be one of those kind of nagging organisms. It can cause a significant economical impact based on the farm and their previous health status, or it can be just kind of minor and coughing pigs, especially at a sow farm that go out at weaning. And we have a little bit of a saying as a coughing pig can be perceived as an unhealthy pig. So we've taken and I've posted or written about it in other publications, but we've taken a vaccination approach to that. One, and we just offered it last Friday, we offer human flu vaccines to all of our employees so that they can get that done and protect themselves, as well as decrease the transmission of them coming to work sick and passing flu amongst themselves, because that's always a bad thing, or even to the pigs, getting human flus in pigs. So we definitely encourage that and made that as easy as we can. And then we've also vaccinate our pigs. And I know there's some systems out there, our sows, I should say, that don't necessarily feel that you need to do that. But I've always taken it as that one health approach. That's what's good for the people. In this case, would be good for the pigs. And we use what we call prime and boost. I think Marie Culhane and Amy Vinson kind of coined the term, but we select four isolates that have been regionally in the area and make those an autogenous vaccine. And then we use a different four isolates as our booster vaccine, and all incoming gilts receive that. And then either pre or post farrowing, depending on the farm and its flow and if it's active with flu, we will vaccinate sows for 20 weeks with one product and then for the next 20 weeks with the other. With the increase in open pen gestation, we've moved some of those vaccines into the farrowing house where it's easier to administer. And we have found, you know, the combination of vaccines you might want to give pre-farrow, the less stress we put on that sow right before farrowing, we decrease the risk of aborts or, you know, having concerns there. So if we can, we'll do a vaccine in the farrowing house about 7 to 10 days after she's farrowed, because we don't want her to go off feed right after she's farrowed as well. And that protocol has worked very well. I want to say we've been doing it for 5 years, maybe even a little bit longer, but that's worked very well for our system. So what we see today with having essentially these sows see 8 strains, and we will update it if we get a new one, but seen 8, been vaccinated against 8 strains of flu, is we don't often see the abortion storms or the clinically coughing sows that we saw prior to implementing this. Now, it could just be lucky, and we haven't had a flu strain that really challenges our, you know, strains in the vaccine. And they may be very homologous at right now, but it's worked well for us. But we will occasionally get reports of pigs going out and end up in a nursery where they're flu positive. That stress of weaning, mixing the litters together, we'll see that transmission occur. And when we get those reports from our individuals taking pigs downstream, we'll go back to the sow farm and find, sure enough, those pigs are now testing flu positive. And we'll get, if that strain's different, we'll look at what we need to do to maybe update our autogenous vaccines. If it's similar enough, I've had good luck with if the virus that we're currently concerned about is less than 3% different. The vaccines that we have, the homology there has worked well. We can actually go in and give sows two doses of this matched vaccine and make sure all pigs have unilateral flow out of the farrowing house and we're not using any holding nurseries that might be on site. We've been able to walk the flu off those farms in about 12 to 15 weeks. But you do have to follow, you know, some of those protocols. But that has worked really well for me. It may be more difficult for others, but I've been very happy with that protocol. The biggest thing with using autogenous vaccines is you have to have the strains. You have to diagnose a flu in your area to then be able to incorporate that into the vaccines. And once you have that novel flu, that process can be longer than what you'd like to see. So it can take, you know, up to 12 to 15 weeks to get that product in a usable, get that vaccine, I'm sorry, in a usable product. But even with those limitations over the years and the way flu changes just due to its nature, that's been the best practice for us.
Yeah, that's a unique thought process, but sounds like it's been successful. And I was going to ask you how long to get that product, but you took my question. So sometimes it can take longer, you know, to get that all done and to get it ready for use on the farm than we'd like.
In previous years, we've used the commercially available products, and as long as they're similar to the flus we've seen, they can be good products too. We've just had very good luck with autogenous.
Yeah. So really, really quick on flu before we move on. There's, you know, the strain that we're all hearing that's affecting dairy cattle across the U.S., H5N1. Anything different in those swine vaccines that you're doing for that? Tell us a little bit about the swine practitioner's view of that virus.
Yeah, so that's definitely a concern that H5N1 is considered a foreign animal disease in pigs. So we're definitely being very mindful of it. Right now, I'm not certain what may come if we find that flu or if that flu can be found in pigs. If it could, it would go through the normal process. But that's going to take some government discussions, I think, at this point to really know where we're going to end up as an industry in regards to that particular virus.
Yeah, absolutely. So my understanding, that particular virus hasn't, you know, been found in pigs until just recently and was in a small herd right in Washington, if I recall. So hopefully as the flu season is upon us, we don't see that as a mix over or a virus that comes into our swine herds. So from what I heard, we're not able to use that vaccine or use a vaccine to prevent it, right? Because one, right, it's not been found in swine, and two, it's still considered a foreign animal disease, as you mentioned.
And my understanding is that impacted 5 pigs, sounded like more of a hobby farm, and it was slightly different than the H5N1 that's been found in dairy cattle as well. So we are all definitely keeping a watchful eye on that situation, and more to come.
Yeah, absolutely. So I want to switch gears just a little bit because, Dania, you've been out in the industry a long time, and we already kind of touched on our interaction with students. So what advice would you have for vets that are just coming into swine medicine?
Well, that's been a minute for me. I would say get involved, you know, go to AASB. The first 3 to 4 years, you're still learning names and faces. And so, you know, maybe don't have a lot of conversations, but go to those meetings, be involved, join. There's at least, I think there's 2 now of like the young swine vet groups. You know, those are your peers that are just getting into the industry. There was Swine Academy back in the day when I started. So organizations like that, whether their names change, but anything that can be offered with your peers, I would go on those trips, be involved in those meetings. It may seem like you have a ton of things to do, But I think networking and learning the names in the industry really help.
Yeah. And just, you know, people are going through the same things in their herds that you are. So it seems to be helpful to just bounce stuff off people and you know, make sure you're not the only one fighting this particular battle or you know, getting up to speed on some new ideas.
If you don't have a mentor or you don't have someone, you know, right there to call or someone in a different system that you can communicate well with, remember the universities are there too. They've got extension folks. They've got people in the D labs and the path labs. I just talked to Darren Mattson yesterday about a concern that I had myself. So, you know, these individuals, you know, work at a university. They're used to working with students. They're used to working with us asking questions. And I think they can be really good resources. Even if you don't know them at first, you'll get to know them if you call them enough and they'll answer, you'll answer the phone on first name basis. So I think the swine industry is very supportive of young practitioners and students.
Yeah. And I couldn't agree more to, you know, have your, I call it your board of directors, you know, people that you reach out to for, you know, advice or help or, you know, just a cheer up sometimes, or maybe just to listen. So having some of the veterinary mentors on your board of directors is important.
And then you find yourself showing up to AASV meetings and people that you haven't talked to since last AASV meeting, you just slip right back into those old conversations.
Oh, absolutely. So, Dania, we're finishing our time out together, but before we get to our three questions that we ask all of our guests, do you have any final thoughts or take-homes from today's topics on swine health and how to prepare herds?
I would just say there's two sayings, and I've had them printed before in other papers that I've written, so at least I'm consistent on quoting myself, is that, you know, when you're looking at change or when you're looking at doing a project, you eat an elephant one bite at a time. So even though it can look big, break it down into the tasks so that you can accomplish it, stage it out. Projects can have phases. And then I've also frequently caught saying, don't let best stand in the way of better. We all know that there's a best practice, but our farm may be designed at a time where that wasn't in place. But what can we do better if we can't truly achieve, you know, what may be considered the gold standard?
Both very good pieces of advice.
It's time for our famous three. We want to thank the innovative companies and products whose support and trust make this podcast possible. Fortiva, creating ingredients for impact to support animal resilience and health. Learn more at fortivaimpact.com. SUNY, we provide value-added biotech solutions. Trow Nutrition North America. Everything we do is driven by passion and backed by science. Essential Ag Solutions, bringing innovative science-based solutions to livestock producers. Keys Manufacturing is America's number one source for cheese meal and dairy powders for your feed. Check us out at keysmanufacturing.com. In swine production, performance is everything. At Lupta, we know your success depends on measurable results. That's why our feed additives go beyond improving palatability. They're scientifically designed to enhance feed intake, support animal well-being, and drive optimal growth. From the weaning transition to periods of stress, our solutions deliver what matters most: resilient animals, improved performance, and a stronger bottom line. Backed by decades of expertise and a commitment to innovation, Lupta is redefining swine nutrition. Because when your herd thrives, so does your business. Lupta. Create, connect, inspire. Visit lupta.com to learn more.
So now our three questions, Dania. And so these are for us to get to know our guests a little bit better. And we have a variety of different answers, which is what makes it kind of fun. So first off is, what's your favorite book or resource that you go to in your area of expertise?
So my favorite book is the Small Swine Disease Manual that offers a short synopsis. It's no longer than 3 pages on the most common swine diseases. And I think, Terry, you're gonna have to help me. I think we're on the 5th edition, but I don't buy a lot of textbooks, and I didn't when I was in college, but I have bought every edition that comes out because I really like it. And I have even bought it for students or made sure that they have copies if they don't. And it's now available online. but I think it's just a nice resource. And I, a time or two have been known to copy pages out of it and share it with producers that have a higher level of understanding or want that. So that's been one of my favorite resources over the years.
Yeah, I agree. That's a good one. It kind of narrows it down, right? And so, you know, diseases of swine is very, very long, and we need that. We need to know all of, you know, a whole chapter on one specific, you know, bug. But the disease manual is very helpful when you every day work with producers and you just want a review of, you know, strep suis or something like that. So yeah, that's a good one.
And I have a second favorite one, which is pathway to pregnancy and parturition, was my reproductive physiology textbook that we used in undergrad. And when you're working through reproductive concerns on a sow farm, I have pulled it out and it has colored pictures on anatomy. So I've been even pulled it out when I have students in my office and I'm trying to explain something and, you know, it's just been nice. But that's my second one that you didn't ask about. But it's kind of weird that those two textbooks have stuck with me.
Yeah, no, I think it's good. I think everybody has their go-tos. And that's exactly what we wanted to hear is what yours are. So how about something that's outside of, you know, vet med? You know, what sort of resource or place or thing do you have you done lately, heard lately, read lately that you recommend to our audience?
Well, just yesterday, one of our newer hires was telling me about ChatGPT for getting to a quick and efficient answer for Excel. That's one area that I know Excel can do things for us, and I'm not familiar all the time with formulas on how to get there, and I get frustrated. I haven't logged on and tried it yet, but they said for, you know, statistics or analytical things like Excel, that would be the way to go. So that's my next thing is to try ChatGPT for my Excel problems.
Ah, yeah, ChatGPT. So I'm going to, you know, age myself and say that I, like you, was like, what is this about? But I have a son in college. And so he educated me on all things ChatGPT and really AI in particular. And it's going to be an exciting new world for us in analytics, I think, what he was able to show me it can do. So just to fool around, I actually put in, we had a trip planned and I put in just, you know, where would you go in this, you know, in this city? And it was pretty cool to see what it came up with as an itinerary. So pretty neat technology.
Well, I was just told about that yesterday. So that's going to be my next goal is to dive into that. And I guess that throughout the industry, we talk about lifelong learning. That's my new learning goal for the next few weeks here.
Yeah, very good. So last is share with us an attribute or characteristic that you feel sets successful professionals apart from others.
I think it would be the ability to communicate, pull groups together, work with different individuals. If you know how to do that, it makes contributions and getting people to rally around you just seem seamless.
Yeah. And having those, you know, just conversations, right? Like we've had today, you know, it's, we have a lot of technical things that we work with every day and in educating, trying to be abreast of new technologies, but it's really just being able to communicate with everybody, from the new person on the farm to, you know, your colleague, right? So yeah, communication. Great. All right. Well, that rounds up, our podcast. With me today was Dr. Dania Klassen, and she's with the Carthage Director of Health at Carthage. Thanks for sharing your insight with us today. If you have any questions or comments, please reach out on your podcast platform and we'll get those addressed. Also, if you liked our session today, please give us a thumbs up. So thanks again and good to see you again, Dania.
You too, Tara. Thank you.
Do you feel overwhelmed with mundane tasks that eat up your valuable time? It's time to reclaim your schedule and focus on what truly matters. Get your time back with Elite Remote Talent without a time zone hassle. Delegate $10 an hour tasks to focus on more $1,000 an hour tasks. Schedule your free strategy call at wisevas.io.